It's 7 p.m. Oh, God. Hang on.
It's Thursday, 7 p.m., and time for another edition of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
Call our guest line at any time during the show and talk about wine on air. Dial 646-727-3235. That's area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport, Mass.
HaberHill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com in Santa Rosa. The philosophy for my brand, Rainborn, is to only use dry farm vineyards, hence the name Rainborn.
The best way to reach us here at Ten Spoon in Montana is to go to www.tenspoon.com.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery, New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
Candia Vineyards on Route 93. That's the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Vivac Winery. We are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Call now and talk about wine on air. Dial 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, Lavinia is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Blackhead Lake Winery, and we're located at Glacier Park in Montana.
Camas Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
And now, it's the show dedicated to the wine industry.
Come and visit Sheila Lauer of the Houston Winery.
This is Dr. Tom Cottrell. He is with the University of Kentucky Extension in Lexington, Kentucky. He's an enologist there.
I learned winemaking from the then 39 wineries in Napa Valley.
All right. We have Jason with us tonight.
Good evening, Ron. Good evening, Mike, from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Not only am I an attorney, that a good part of my practice focuses on wine regulations and litigation, but I also am the president of a vineyard up here. I started the Hershey-Harrisburg Wine Country.
Again, the website is greenbelle.com. Our phone number is 401-847-3777.
Info at hummingbirdridgewinery.com. My dad always said I'm a jack of all trades. He said that when I was a little guy.
Anyone out there who is interested in this software, you really need to go check out this site. It's www.uncork.biz.
That's really what we're about, and that's, as you said, uncork.biz is where our main site is, and that's where people can read lots about it.
Info at vineyard@hershey.com.
Well, I grew up on the farm here in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
We have a website, Waltz, vineyard with an S, don't forget the S.
Paul is a blogger.
It's blog.penlive, P as in Paul, ENNLIVE.com/wine, and that should get you to my wine classroom.
It's wineflower.com, all one word, wineflower.
It's all about wine. Here is your host, Ron.
Wow.
It's warm here, so they have to cheer, yeah.
And it's raining, and they're still outside.
Did they realize that that rain could very easily be snow if they just travel a little bit further north? So
that's true. So we're sitting in 75-degree weather right now in Zephyr Hills. I'm sure it's a little bit, I don't know, you get kind of cooler over there as you get towards your neck of
toward
the woods.
Toward the water,
but, yeah, so we got showers and, you know, that kind of thing. But, yeah, we're not shoveling snow or anything like that. We're not in a blizzard.
Not in a blizzard.
Can't complain
about
that.
Always a bit, yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to address something here too. The opening there, we heard a lot of phone numbers, we heard a lot of email addresses, we heard a lot of wineries. We have a website now, and Mike has set that up. Yay! We have a website, and the website All About Wine BTR, www.allaboutwinebtr.com. It has lists of every one of those people that were talking on the radio, that are talking in the opening there. So if you didn't catch any of those, you can always go to allaboutwinebtr.com and check all that stuff out and connect to all of them through that site.
Yeah, cool. And there's a links to their website, and plus there's a map down at the bottom that is updated whenever possible to put them on the map so you can see who we've talked to. And just got updated again for tonight's guest, so that's cool. So they're on there now.
It's a nice site. Nice. You know, yay, Mike.
Thank you.
It's something that, you know, puts All About Wine on the in your face on the page there. And then once you get that, you can link on over to all sorts of stuff like our Facebook page and our Twitter account, and all that stuff is available through that.
Cool. Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. AllAboutWineBTR.com. Get there. Do it now.
Okay. Do it now.
Yeah.
As long as you're not driving and listening to this.
Yeah. They're supposed to make that illegal now, I think, texting and driving here in Florida.
I hope so. I was behind a lady the other day that was going like 15 miles an hour because she was texting. You know, I am sure she thought she was safe, but actually she was creating such a hazard all around her that it was unbelievable. So
I see them on the interstate weaving in and out, you know, in their lane. They almost look like they're drunk. And you look over and they're just staring down at, it looks like the bottom of their steering wheel, but you know there's a phone there. So
you know there's a phone there, yeah.
That's right. That's what they're doing. Oh, is this about wine? Oh.
Yeah, well, we'll get off our soapbox here.
Yes. Yes. I'll go put our guest on hold. So
okay, you go get our guest, and I'll tell a little bit about him while Mike is gone here getting a hold of our guest. We have, actually, we're still in South Dakota tonight. We were in South Dakota the last couple of weeks, and we continue to stay there one more week, maybe next week too. I don't know. I need to get on the phone, see if anybody is available to come on. If not, then we may move on. I'm also trying to get, and I've been saying this, I know a lot, I've been trying to get people from a cork company. I've been trying to get people from a bottle company. All this different stuff. I will. Eventually, these people will return my calls and will agree to come on, and we will get guests on from other areas of the wine. I am bottling right now at the winery, Florida State Winery. We're in the middle of doing some bottling. Everything's ready and putting it in the bottles and getting it out on the shelf for spring here. And so been busy doing that. And while I was doing that, ordering the bottles and corks and capsules and everything that we need to do this, I found that I asked them if they could be on and join us. And most of them said, yeah, sure, it'd be great. But then that's as far as it's went. So I've called them and tried to pinpoint a time, a date, any of those. Nothing has came about yet. So hang in there. Stay with us. Tell your friends. Tell your family. Tell everybody. Tune in to us. And I'll try to get some more information on that. If you happen to be a cork company or a cork capsule company or a tank, stainless steel or plastic, a lot of people are using plastic. If you happen to be one of those, any of those, by all means, get in touch with us. We'd love to have you on the program. It would be a lot of fun. No gimmicks or anything. We just want to get you on there and talk about what you have and stuff like that. So, it looks like we might have Bob waiting for us in the green room. Let's get Bob on out here. And hello, Bob. Welcome.
Hi there. How are you today?
I'm doing really great. And yourself?
Greetings. I'm doing great. Greetings from warm and sunny South Dakota.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I just had a girl that was in the winery Tuesday who was down here visiting her parents from South Dakota. And she said it was 35 degrees below zero when she left home. Now, I said, wind chill? And she goes, no, that's the true temperature. And so
South Dakota is the land of infinite variety, and certainly that's no different than the type of weather we had. And I listened to the archived versions of your previous South Dakota talks, and they were talking about how cold it was, and luckily I was in California at Unified Wine and Grape Expo during the most cold part of that stretch, but it's still 50 degrees here today, and it was quite sunny.
Above
and,
zero?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really? But, wow.
And we are at the other end of the state from your previous two guests, and we typically have those inversion temperatures like that, so kind of a different place than what they are.
Are you protected by the Rockies by any chance, or what causes
it? We are essentially in the center of the Black Hills of South Dakota, and Black Hills is a small range, about 110 to 130 miles long, and 60, 80 miles wide, and we are at about 5,000 foot elevation right here at the winery. We don't have any production right here at this location, but certainly it's a great place. I heard the Mr. Greenlee mention about, or maybe it was you giving some background on South Dakota last week about Harney Peak and its height. We can look out our window and see Harney Peak. It's about just a few miles away, and obviously we're very close to Mount Rushmore as well too. So we have a lot of tourist traffic and great guests from all over the United States and the world.
Well, that sounds exciting. That sounds like a great place there. And in Harney Peak, for those of you who may have missed it last week, I always tried to tell a little bit about the states, and Harney Peak was the highest point in the state of South Dakota. So,
highest point in the state of South Dakota and the highest point east of the Rockies in the United States.
Oh, and that also. I didn't know that. Wow. So we're finding out all sorts of interesting information right here. So being on the west side of the state, you listened to the archives of the last two shows on the eastern side. Being on the western side of the state, your climate, is that drastically different because of where you're located, or is it just cold in South Dakota no matter where you are?
It can be very cold here, but the western part of the state, especially in the hills or the close proximity to the hills, it can be quite a bit warmer, and a lot of that is a function of the elevation. Many times there's inversions, and inversions it'll be literally 20 to 40 degrees different past the foothills as it is in the higher elevations, probably above 4,000 or 5,000 feet, and it's It can be very, very remarkable, and it is also considerably different than the eastern part of the state. You talked about below zero temperatures, including the 30 below. It's not extraordinary for us to be 30 below in this part of the state by any means, and have extreme stretches of that of those very cold temperatures. But we tend to actually moderate very fairly often in the winter, which presents some really interesting challenges for the things that we grow out in the fields as well too.
And that was going to be my next question to you. With that much of a difference, you're saying you're 50 now. You had to have been cold last week or a couple of weeks ago during the Canadian cold front that came down. So anything you have in the ground has to be severely affected or extremely tolerant.
Well, and I think it's a little of both. One of our big challenges, and we're throughout South Dakota, obviously, is that we have to have grapes that will survive in the ground to temperatures pretty standard below 30 degrees. But the additional charge to the grapes and what makes it very challenging here in western South Dakota is that they also need to withstand periods of 50 to 70 degree days in January and February, and then going back to 20 below in March.
Wow.
It can take these grapes out of dormancy, and certainly too, as it warms up, when they start to break bud, they will also have a lot of difficulty with not even really late freezes, but just ordinary freezes that we get that get still fairly cold. Still a pretty high potential to get freezing temperatures to 26 degrees to the middle of May.
Wow. So when is bud break?
Typically in late April. It depends upon the variety and the kind of the pruning timing as well too. Most of the growers have looked at trying to delay pruning to delay bud break, and that gives us a little bit of extra time for that bud break. But there's actually, I heard you talk about the Valiant grape, which isn't typically used a lot for wine here in South Dakota, but it can be very, very late, and that's what makes it probably bearing have the ability to bear even in years when it's very we have a very late spring or some extremely cold or frosty temperatures as well.
Now you also have a lot of fruit. I noticed your fruit wines. While we're talking about the cold weather and affecting grapes, does it affect your fruit?
Yes, it does. Just like everything else, it's usually more of a pollination issue with most of the fruit wines. We have choke cherries, wild plums, buffalo berries, rhubarb, which obviously isn't a fruit. It's more of a vegetable stock, but it tends to get by pretty easily. But then the other things like the apples and some of those products that we use, obviously they get impacted fairly considerably by late frost during pollination, and that really can dramatically decrease yields or completely wipe out the crop.
Wow. So it's a roll of dice every year then?
Absolutely.
Wow.
Choke cherries are probably the hardiest, and they seem to do fairly well. But there are some of the other ones that have been severely challenged in the last couple of years because we've had such extremes. We went from 2011 being one of the wettest years on record to 2012, which was one of the driest years on record. So really, really tough. And you would think that, well, with a warm, dry winter like we had last year, that pollination wouldn't be the problem, and freezing and stuff like that. But it certainly was. The year before, when it was extremely wet, again, additional challenges with pollination, and but not so much with weather. Certainly, though, the dry climate last year, the extraordinary dry conditions throughout most of the state, and really tough temperatures really had an impact on the quantity of the grapes that were produced.
Mm. So we've talked about grapes. What type of grapes do you use? What type of grapes do you grow or have access to there?
We are about like the rest of the wineries. We typically do all the hybrids developed by Elmer Swenson in his program, or before he got to the University of Minnesota. But Frontenac and Frontenac Gris, Brianna, La Crescent, St. Pepin, and Marquette. And we have tried some of the other ones, La Crosse, and we may see those again as well too. There's a bunch of production going on within the state, but it's very, very small amounts and very very isolated amounts, which is kind of a unique characteristic. It cuts down on diseases, but boy, it can be tough to find people that can pick grapes and the neighbor that knows what's happening if you're having a problem as well too.
You mentioned I talked about the Valiant. I had a couple in at the winery from Manitoba. What was it? Monday they stopped by, and they were telling me they have 15 plants that they are growing in Manitoba, and they said it's great for jellies and jams. And I asked them what type, and they said it was the Valiant. And the lady said her son wants to make a wine out of it. And I said, well, before you do, contact some of the wineries down in South Dakota. They'll let them know what's going on. But that surprised me that the Valiant was growing so well as far north as Manitoba.
Yes, and I've seen that on the various information comparisons utilizing the Valiant grape. It is winter hardy well into Canada, and typically it's classified as being winter hardy to 50 below, which is pretty tough. But it also breaks dormancy fairly late. So not only does it kind of have the ability to withstand the very cold temperatures, its late dormancy break takes it away from some of that damage during maybe some of the warm stretches that we typically have, and then get a frost after that.
Although it's sad that it's not able to be used as a good solid wine grape yet anyway, you know, when I understand that's...
It makes excellent jelly, tremendous juice, and I've only had a couple of wines that were drinkable, and actually halfway decent wines made out of Valiant, but it's pretty few and far between. I think most wineries and including ourselves have gone away from it.
Uh-huh. We talked about how cold it gets in the winter and your winter weather. What's the summer weather? What highs do you usually get? I mean, you're on the western part of the state there. Obviously, it seems like it would be moderated a little bit more because of the hills.
And certainly the hills are. I have seen it snow in the hills every month of the year during my lifetime. And there are times just not too far from here is it will frost or freeze ice on the top of water in June.
Ooh.
Even in late August as well too. So not a real clear span for doing that, but that's the great part about being in the hills. If it's 110 degrees in the Badlands, which is about 80 miles east of here, you come up in the hills and it might only be 75 to 85 degrees. So very, very nice place to come camp.
It's amazing that it's that much of a variance of the temperature there. You know, I've been to South Dakota a couple of times in my life, but most of the time I was just going through it in the summer, and so I never really experienced the fluctuation that much.
Yeah, and it's most of the time it's really nice, but it doesn't take you very long to realize if you were out on the prairies during a hot summer day, if you decide that you wanted to camp near Mount Rushmore, you better have a good sleeping bag.
That's just strange. That, you know, we start getting below 40 degrees here, and we start bundling up. So it's just, so your wine. Oh, first, before I talk about your wine, Prairie Berry Winery. Give us a little history of that.
Prairie Berry Winery was started by Sandy Voida and her dad Ralph, and Sandy's husband Matt, and it was a labor of love from the very beginning. Sandy, her father, and actually three generations before that have been winemakers. Her great grandparents immigrated from Czechoslovakia and brought winemaking skills with them to the prairies of South Dakota. And these are the prairies where it is harsh, it is cold. It can be dry, and they made wines out of the fruits that and the products that were available to them, and obviously that included the choke cherries and potentially the rhubarb and buffalo berries, and that tradition passed on through the generations. And Sandy certainly was picking choke cherries and making wine at a very, very young age, and continued on to her profession and started a commercial winery in South Dakota in 1998. So this year we will be 15 years old as a commercial operation.
Well, congratulations. Were you the first ones in South Dakota?
We were actually the second license issued in the state of South Dakota, but it was just kind of a few days apart. The gentleman that helped write the bill for the farm winery licenses was granted the first license. So I guess that's how it goes. But nonetheless, we've both been in business for since the beginning.
Wow, that's exciting. Now we got the history of the wines. Let's talk about the wines that y'all make. Now, I looked at your list there. You got a lot of different wines, quite a variety. Tell us about some of your wines and some of I know your premier wine because just about every site that I go to and everything that I read and everything that I'm talking about starts talking about your red-ass rhubarb. So I know that has to be your signature wine, if you will. But okay. Tell us about your wines.
Our red-ass rhubarb is our signature wine. He's our brand leader. He's become fairly synonymous with Prairie Berry, and obviously you see the images of throughout the hills on signage and various ads and stuff like that, and quite a respected and if you want to call it a respected and well-known image, and it's great. Red Ass Rhubarb continues to be our number one selling wine. It's a great wine. It's semi-sweet. It is made with rhubarb and raspberry, that's kind of where some of the name originated, was from the red color that potentially the raspberry lent to it. But we also make this year as a kind of a counterpoint to that, we made a straight rhubarb wine called Uncle Ralph's Rhubarb, which is much drier and named after Ralph, who was very instrumental, Sandy's father, who still peeks into the winery every once in a while and makes sure that we're doing it right. There are stories where they used to essentially go through the alleyways of the small towns in South Dakota and buy garbage sacks of rhubarb to make wine with, because everybody had a little bit of rhubarb and usually excess quantities of rhubarb in their backyard. I wished it was that easy at this point in time, but we're still happy that rhubarb is kind of our brand leader. But we obviously have a whole cellar full of different wines as well too.
Let's go back to rhubarb. Now, I love a rhubarb pie. I was born and raised in the Midwest, and I like rhubarb. But for all the people out there that listen to this who really don't know what a rhubarb is, could you explain a rhubarb?
Well, rhubarb, I think there's probably some analogs in the horticultural world that are maybe more decorative, but it has a very a very thick stalk. And it is full of water, and a very large leaf. And that leaf is actually kind of funny because it's actually toxic. It is full of oxalic acid, so that we have to make sure that all the leaf is removed from the stalk. But the stalk has very succulent and has a little bit of sugar. And the key word is little bit. Typically, only about about 4% as opposed to a wine grape, which will, you know, might be 20 to 25% sugar.
Right.
So
yeah.
We do a lot of things to it, including obviously adding sugar to get it where it needs to be, just like you would a pie.
Right. So the rhubarb plant is a plant. How tall?
I've seen them, you know, in the backyards, maybe a couple feet tall, to in commercial fields where they're probably 3 foot, maybe a little bit larger, and stalks like a baseball bat, the handle of the baseball bat, not necessarily the
pad end. So those are rhubarb. For those of you out who don't know what a rhubarb is, there's the rhubarb.
It certainly has kind of an apple-y taste when you eat it fresh from the field, if you are brave enough to kind of try the tartness and the astringency of it out of the garden. It is quite astringent, and it will make you pucker, but it does have a very nice and crisp apple-y taste, and that's what like Uncle Ralph's rhubarb, our new version of wine, has captured that very well. It tastes like very much like fresh rhubarb.
Oh, very good. It's something like a kumquat. People don't understand what a kumquat is. The same thing. It's just very, very tart, very, you know, puckery. But once you get past that, then it's, you know, gives you a nice taste on it too, which is kumquats, one of our little fruits down here in Florida. You were talking about some of the others. I'll let you go ahead and talk about some of the other wines. Buffalo berry. We just discovered last week or week before last what a buffalo berry was, and it seems like that's a very popular wine in South Dakota.
Sure, and buffalo berries is one of those fruits that falls victim many times to the weather. A good buffalo berry crop is maybe 1 out of 5 years, maybe some would say 1 out of 10 years.
Wow.
And as Mr. South pointed out, it's a real thorny bush, and it becomes really an exercise in sadism in order to pick them. So we usually have to pay a premium price to incite people to go out there and pick them off the prairies of South Dakota. This year in the western part of the state, we actually had a fairly good crop of buffalo berries, so we were scrambling to try to get as many buffalo berries as we could to make the next version.
Is a buffalo? I've never heard of buffalo berry. Is a buffalo berry actually the name of it, or is that just a regional name?
I think it's kind of the common name.
Is it? Yes.
Not indifferent than a chokecherry or some of the other things, Juneberries or gooseberries or something like that. It's fairly common here on the dry Great Plains of western South Dakota and to the north and even farther to the west. It typically does fairly well when it has a moderate amount of moisture or it has had a moderate amount of moisture in the past, and typically it will do fairly well when a lot of the other prairie fruits haven't done so well.
I I've never heard of a buffalo berry, but yet, you know, I'm hearing about the wines being made from it. Steuben grape, is that your? I noticed your buffalo berry is blended, is infused with the Steuben.
Yeah, we've used buffalo berry with Steuben, and we've also made a straight buffalo berry wine as well too, which is a very unique product, we like them. We've fused a few other things with some of the grapes that come out of the upper Midwest and farther to the east as well, too, because of their availability. We like to have things that kind of represent something other than what you might find in California or the West Coast or certainly farther south. We also do those wines as well, too.
I noticed that you have on your list of wines, a Merlot, you talk about a Cabernet aged in oak, or the Zinfandel, these different wines. Are those brought in from elsewhere, and where?
Actually, the grapes are primarily sourced from grape partners that that we have in California, mostly Sonoma County.
Mm-hmm.
They are fine grapes, and we stick with the same people to try to make sure that we can kind of fine tune our program and make sure that we have a great success, and we're still fine tuning, but I think we are doing it quite well, although fairly unique, because we harvest grapes early in the morning, probably not any different than anybody else, but we put them on a refrigerated truck and have them in our winery many times ahead of similar grapes that are harvested and hauled down the coast in California.
Mm. You said that you're still fine tuning. You've been open since 1998, and you're still fine tuning. That seems
a
contradiction.
Yeah, you know, our sourcing model has changed over the years because we weren't satisfied with it. For the past two or three years, we have tried to develop a model that was not only more efficient, but resulted in a better quality of grape, and then obviously a better wine as well too. And it's actually quite fulfilling for me to walk a vineyard and look at the grapes and talk to the farmer and see how they're progressing, and we try to monitor that. And it's a real challenge because obviously logistics of moving it 1,400 miles are considerably greater than the logistics of moving it 14 miles down there.
Without question, yes. You're absolutely right. I noticed on your semi-sweet and sweet wines there, you know, we talked about your cranberries and some of these others there, but this pumpkin bog, that is fascinating. And notes of cinnamon and cola on the nose, cherry cordial flavors, fresh pumpkin. Is that, how's that put together? Is that all pumpkin, or is that just
it is
a pie that's mashed up.
And I think that's we try to tell people that it's not a piece of pumpkin pie.
Okay.
But the pumpkins are raised here in South Dakota, in the center part of the state. I heard you talking earlier about Pierce, South Dakota, our state capital. They're raised. Most of them are raised very near Pierce, and They are peeled and chunked and thrown into the tank, so you can imagine that maybe when we get ready to rack the wines, that we have a lot of material in there. we do add cranberry to it, so that's kind of the other element to pumpkin bog, and it is a seasonal favorite. It actually for a short time actually outsells our best-selling wine, because everybody has to have it for the holidays, and we like it. It's a fun wine to make and to serve as well.
It sounds good. It really, like I say, it sounds like you just threw a whole bunch of pies in there and fermented them, so it gives you, your description here is fantastic. Your sweet wines, your dessert wines, strawberry fusion, obviously the strawberries, but the Niagara grapes, are you getting the Niagara grapes out of New York?
We have in the past, absolutely, and strawberry fusion is probably our sweetest cellar offering that we have right now. Very sweet, but full of rich strawberry flavor, and it's kind of backed by popular demand. So it was an interesting grape to have back in the cellar, but we'll probably move that around and replace that with other fairly sweet wines. One of my favorites this year out of the 2011 vintage was our Frontenac, which we made into a sweet dessert wine, or a port style wine, fairly high alcohol and fairly high residual sugar, and very drinkable, very very nice with something that's you know, maybe at the end of the meal or something a little bit sweeter, and a very nice wine made from those grapes that are, that we source from right here in South Dakota.
Sounds fascinating. I have to have you tell us about the Gin 5 Wine Club. It's simply because I'm looking here and there are certain wines that are just for the Gin 5 Wine Club, and it's you know, quite a list. I mean, it's almost like a whole bunch of them just for them. So if you tell us about that.
Right. I think it's Gin 5 represents the generation, the five generations of winemakers ahead of this to make our winery where it was where it's at right now, and it is the top tier of wine club membership, and it is the very select wines that we offer, not because we're trying to ration out the amount of wines that anybody gets, but basically that's what we get. We've been kind of, in a way, it's kind of up to this point in time, it's been kind of a product of our success. We've been so successful is that we can't keep ahead of the demand for it, so we do limit it. And the wines that are usually in the Gin 5 Wine Club are those that have very limited production, but they are very good wines. All of our South Dakota grapes, the Frontenac Gris, the Brianna, the La Crescent, St. Pepin, typically tend to be those Gin 5 wines. And the other ones that are very unique, sometimes they'll make that list as well, too. And we try to do things that maybe are a little bit twisted from some of our standard wines. We'll throw it in an oak barrel and age it a little bit longer, or we'll make it a little bit different style, and typically tends to be for the more practiced wine drinker. Let's put it that way.
Uh huh. That sounds like I read that. That's a fascinating club. I mean, you know, it really is a great way to approach it too. I like the special discount to your club. That is a unique thing I have never seen before.
Right.
The aging, stainless steel, oak, plastic, what do you all use?
Stainless steel, oak, and kind of everything in between. We do not use plastic, but we have almost all the winery is dedicated to temperature-controlled stainless steel fermentation tanks, but we do have as much oak as we can fit into the winery and still move around, and we use French and Hungarian, Missouri, Minnesota, so we have a number of various options for us, and kind of some of the oak alternatives kind of in the middle as well, too.
Oh, so you get oak from everywhere. That was going to be my next question. Where do you source your oak? You seem like to get quite a variety of oak. Does that do you specify certain oaks for certain wines just to impart the flavor continuously, or do you rotate? Or
sure, our winemaker is really pretty sensitive about that. Not only the origin of the oak, but the toasting levels. You know, kind of all the other things that go along with it, and we feel that we've got a nice oak program, and I would say that most of the wines probably are you know, indicative of the care that's taken with selecting the right oak for the right wine.
That sounds very good. That really does. You mentioned something about not having a vineyard around there. Does Prairie Berry have vineyards, and if so, where?
We have a very excellent single vineyard partner who is featured on all of our South Dakota wines, and they are not only single vineyard but single variety wines typically, and Lewis and Clark Lake Vineyards near Yankton, South Dakota, and they have been our partners for at least 10 years, if I remember correctly. Greg and Muriel do a great job at understanding what we want and adjusting that accordingly. They've taken grapes out and planted new ones, and so they are very very good partners to have, and we really like what they can do for us. Our vision at Prairie Berry is maybe to someday is to augment what Greg and Muriel have done by having other vineyards that are geographically dispersed throughout the state, so that we're not so subject to weather maladies and the various things that might happen. Plus, might give us a little bit more complex cellar offerings as well too. There's a lot of people in South Dakota that are experimenting with commercial grape production, but as we talked about before, the extreme variations in climate are all going to produce a dramatically different fruit, and even the soils are well too as well. The state is divided by the Missouri River, and the Missouri River is there because 10,000 years ago during the last ice age, the glaciers pushed it there, mowed down everything else in the eastern part of the state, and left very rich, less soils that have fairly high organic matter and a fairly flat terrain, where the western part of the state is still basically rolling hills and prairies, very low organic matter, very few trees, and a small amount of topsoil. Unless you can add water to it, you're probably not going to raise much.
Hmm. So you really are divided into two basic areas because of that, then.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And at some point in time, we would love to have our own vineyard as well, too, and produce our own grapes in a state program. But we're not there yet, but hopefully we will be in the near future.
The fruits, do you grow those, any of those, or?
The same way with the fruits. Most of the fruits that we procure are wild fruits.
Oh.
And they are picked by a small army of that we have agreements with throughout the years. We have one gentleman and his entire family that provide a lion's share of the fruit that we receive every year, and he's been a great partner for us, and he really knows what we want, and does his best job to deliver that as well too.
Wow, that's interesting thing. Wild fruit on that's good. You're not an AVA there, are you? I don't think any of South Dakota is.
No, we are not. We can call it South Dakota wines. We actually have South Dakota honey. We do a honey wine as well, and actually have done two or three versions of that. The most popular one that we have offering for right now is raspberry honey wine, but we've had other versions as well too, and a real a real favorite of a lot of people. But certainly it has. A lot of people that really like to see it, and a lot of people that get upset when it's not there.
Yeah, it's really not a mead then. It's a blend.
Right. It's I believe I remember correct. The percentage is about 90%. Or 80% honey base, and then add a little bit of the fruit for flavoring. So, works very well for us. It tends to have the honey legacy, which is really a lot of people really like. It's not a bad taste. It's not a great taste. It's just a legacy. And I think it's what people that drink it and demand it, it's what they seek.
Yeah, that's you know, that sounds good also. Government, you know, local, state, federal, love them, hate them, want to kill them, want to hug them?
Yeah. Well, obviously, I think we probably share some of the same frustrations with label approval from TDP.
Oh, yeah.
And some of that, the turnaround time on that, but I guess we can't complain too much. State government, I can't say too much bad because I used to be a part of that. I worked for our South Dakota Department of Ag and was actually the interface with the wine industry as it developed over the last 12, 13 years. So I think because of what I've done and maybe what our former ag secretaries saw is that they saw, well, this is an opportunity for South Dakota. We are packaging kind of who we are, and so much of the product that we raise in South Dakota, the ag product, goes out as a commodity. In this particular case, it's just 180 degrees away from that. It is not only highly branded, it is a great product, and people can take it home with them and enjoy it a year later and still remember that experience in South Dakota.
That's a great way. You mentioned something there while you were just talking, and when I talked to you earlier today to confirm, I said I wanted to talk about this. You worked for the Ag Department in the state for, you said, 10 years?
Correct. Yeah. I was a development specialist, and so I did a number of things in terms of business and market development, and certainly wineries were on my list, and I had a kind of an affinity toward helping wineries, and it certainly was very fun. I saw this business develop, including meeting my current boss and the owner of Prairie Berry Winery about 12 years ago when they were actually unloading buffalo berries out of the back of a pickup, readying them for fermenting, and I asked them, I said, where did you get all those buffalo berries at? Anybody who's picked berries off the prairie like that, they realize how tenuous of a process it is. And the reply was, when I asked them where they came from, we picked them. And so not only did they pick them, they were in making wine, and certainly Sandy offered me some great wine right from the very beginning, and it's been her enthusiasm and attention to detail and just unwavering commitment to producing great wines from all these great products that we have at hand that has helped her dad and her husband make Prairie Berry what it is today.
And obviously, people like you who are employed there are very enthusiastic, and so that helps a lot too. One other thing, I was thumbing through your website here, and there was a wine note, and it mentions stelve enclosures or the screw caps. You have went over completely to screw cap.
We use stelve enclosures exclusively here in the winery. We feel that it provides a much, much better product long term. Is that we don't have problems with corks that leak. We have a case or a whole pallet full of cases, and we don't have bad bottles. You know, the failure rates that there is typically associated with corks, and you hear all sorts of estimates from 2 to 3% on up. And when we just don't have that, we also purge all of our bottles with nitrogen, so they have a nice environment to sit down. Obviously, there is still some public concern or skepticism about the value of screw cap wines, but I think if they drink our wines, they understand is that that we're as good in it as any wine that's got a cork in it, and and every bottle will be as good as any wine that has a cork in it, or some of the ones that that maybe have failed as well too.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, the Stelvin closures or the screw cap is a great thing, and most wines are made to be drank anyway. So I tell people, I mean, you can put an old rag in a wine because you're going to end up drinking it before it goes bad anyway. So there's nothing wrong with screw caps, and we need to get away from that stigma that it's Boone Farm, you know. And so, the screw caps, it's great to know that you actually. Prairie Berries went completely to screw caps. That's really pretty cool, I think.
We have the ability on our bottling line to put the corks in. We just no longer use it. We've discussed it, and about every discussion answering the question is, why would we ever do corks? Because we're really... we're sold on the Stelvin closures, and they do a great job for us, and really like them, and I think it's very consistent with our customers. We don't have a lot of not to sound harsh, but wine snobs as our customer base. We have people that I think that are not only willing to try a great screw cap wine, but they're also willing to try our cellar offerings that are pretty non-typical, the hybrid grapes, the fusion wines, the great fruit wines that we do, and obviously the ones that are considerably more sweet than a lot of the palate of the United States has traditionally been. I heard you talking earlier about the continued growth of sweet wines, and
yes,
I think we're tapped into that pretty well. And we have the dry offerings too. We do dry Cabernets and Chardonnay and Zinfandel, but we have all the other things, kind of all the way through the gamut. So it's usually not very often that we can't find a wine that will please someone.
You know, and the Stelvin closures too, the screw caps that you use are a simple step. People don't understand after, I think, as you're putting in corks and then the capsules that go on them is an extra step, which creates more time during the bottling, which creates more expense, whereas the Stelvin is a single step there. So, you know, I mean, all this stuff is something that people, you know, can look at and understand that helps keep costs down, which I'm sure you pass on to the customer. So that's
absolutely, and our wines will be good in a month from now or in a year from now as well too.
And that's always a good plus too.
Right.
Tour de Chocolate.
That's Tour de Chocolate.
Tell us about Tour de Chocolate.
Well, Prairie Berry. Obviously, we are a very event focused. Becoming now a destination location in the hills. We have a kitchen on site, and they do everything from your daily lunch to special events. We have a dessert pastry chef on staff,
wow.
And they're always down there cooking up things that fill the winery, especially the front of the house portion of it, with these great enticing smells, including chocolate or maybe on a particular day bacon or some of the great soups that they make as well too. But Tour de Chocolate obviously is we usually always have chocolate offerings in the tasting room available, but Tour de Chocolate will step that up quite a ways, and we actually have a Valentine's Day bistro offered a couple times, both the 14th and the 15th of February, that not only do they get their the four courses all paired with great wines, they actually have a full flight of wine with the chocolate that's offered for dessert. And so if you're looking for a chocolate fix, that's the place to be.
It sounds like it. If I leave now, I can make it up there by the 14th.
Yeah. Barring any bad weather, right?
Barring any bad weather. Oh, well, we're talking about South Dakota, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never can tell. Mike, do you have any questions for Bob here?
Yeah, actually, you mentioned the screw caps. I had that down. Also, the Buffalo Berry. I noticed on your purchasing part to purchase wines that you have a list of states that you can ship to. So you can ship out of the state of South Dakota. How are you able to do that? Are you using a third party to ship, or what's the process?
We have a department that is direct to consumer, and we ship primarily via FedEx to all the states that we can legally ship to. Unfortunately, we cannot ship within our own state, and theoretically that nobody else is supposed to be able to ship directly into South Dakota, although we know that does happen. But we don't want to risk doing that, and probably at some point in time we'll see that that change.
Yeah. And it should. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
so
we've covered
we could ship a bottle to Florida, and this would be a great time of the year to ship it. We get a little bit leery during the summer when it gets a little bit warmer, but just like any winery will do. But we love to offer our motorcyclists coming for the Sturgis Rally in August the ability to ship back if they're just riding a motorcycle. We can get it back to them and in good shape, and if it gets real hot, we might slow down for a little while, but generally we can get it home to them quicker than they will be on the back of their bike.
Interesting.
I need a wine from South Dakota.
You need a wine from South Dakota?
Yes. Let me explain to you. Ever since we opened, we've been open over 11 years now, and I've been asking people to bring me a wine from different states. I've got 48 of the 50 states. I do not have South Dakota or Wyoming. And everybody promised me South Dakota wines. I need a wine from South Dakota.
We will definitely have to remedy that. I can do you probably the maybe one of our favorite South Dakota grapes made into one of my favorite wines from the Frontenac Gris in 2011 was one of my favorites, and then like the Uncle Ralph's Rhubarb, which is a very interesting and unique product that I think will go very well with your weather about down there now. kind of a spring wine.
That sounds great. Well, I will communicate with you when I get off here. I'll flash an email back to you, and we'll see what we can't make this happen here, because I have been waiting for a South Dakota wine. We've been open over 11 years. I've been asking people to bring one in for at least 10 years, and I still have not received one. And so.
Well, that sounds great. You know, I gave you a couple suggestions, but if you have anything else that's on your mind, let me know and communicate that with me, and we'll get you fixed up.
You would know better than I what you have and what you like. So your suggestions, I can't go wrong, I'm sure. But I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mike, but when he mentioned shipping, I had...
Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
I'm still waiting for a South Dakota wine.
There you go. I thought that was interesting, being able to ship like that. That's cool. We need everybody to go take a look at the website, and we'll give the website information out in a minute. But check that out, because you might be in one of those states that they can ship to, and you can have some great wine from South Dakota right there. So be sure to visit the website and order when we give out the website information. So that'll be great. Also, I was reading on your events about the Wine Express Into the West. This is something that you've been doing for a while, or how's that been working? Tell us about that event in September, looks like.
Absolutely. Hill City, the small town that we're located very nearby, is very famous over the years runs between Hill City and the little town of Keystone, and a few other parts from time to time. Keystone is a small town located just a couple of miles away from Mount Rushmore, so it's a nice little train ride on an old steam locomotive and passenger cars, which is really unique for South Dakota because we don't have any passenger rail in the state. But it's a really slow and beautiful, beautiful ride in the fall. And we put everybody on the train and give them a nice little box lunch prepared all fresh by hand by our chefs right here within the winery. And we pair it up with some great wines, and everybody just has a great time. And it's one of our premier events for the fall, other than maybe just coming here and sitting on the patio and enjoying that same weather outside there. But throughout the year, we'll do various bistros several times during the year, which have different themes based on kind of what's going on either in the year or maybe even with the food selections as well.
Sounds so fascinating. All of it does. Mm-hmm. Sounds so fascinating.
Yeah. That was it. You answered everything else. So, yeah, very good. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, great. Thank you very much.
Bob, what anything else you'd like to let us know about that we didn't happen to cover? And if not, then give us all the contact information for Prairie Berry Winery, including Facebook pages, Twitter, websites, phone numbers, anything and everything you can think of. So if anybody wants to get in touch with you, they can also, like we mentioned earlier, too, we have a link to your place through the All About Wine BTR website, so they can always check with us to get in hold of you. But, again, anything you want to mention?
Sure. Probably the best way for all of our information is just go to our website, which actually should be renewed here with a complete new website here within a very short time. But it's www.prairieberry.com. So pretty simple name, and it has all sorts of links with Facebook and Twitter and some of the other elements as well too. So we'll be happy to contact with you. You can this is a commerce site as well, so you can order wine as long as we can legally ship it to you, and the various other products that we produce here in the winery as well. Certainly we are located in Hill City, South Dakota, right in the heart of the beautiful Black Hills of South Dakota. And we love to have guests. That's what we're built around. And I hope that everybody comes here will find that we have just some of the most excellent and knowledgeable staff, and that they will really treat you right, and it will be worth a visit to Prairie Berry whenever you're in the area.
And you're open year round, and you have a kitchen as well. I was looking at that too. Very good.
Yes. Yeah. We're serving meals and throughout the day. We are open year-round every day except for Christmas, Easter, and maybe Thanksgiving Day, or pardon me, New Year's Day. But other than that, we are open essentially 7 days a week. Our hours vary a little bit, but typically from 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning until at least 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and a little bit later during the summertime when it's beautiful to sit out there on the patio and drink some wine.
great picture you painted there, Bob. I love that. Well, thank you very much for your time this evening, and definitely going to be a stop that I'm going to have to put in our itinerary one of these days to visit Prairie Berry. It sounds like a beautiful place, and in the summer. My wife in the background just said, in the summer.
In the summer, yeah. actually, the fall is really a beautiful time as well, too.
The fall is a good time, all right. One other thing, too, for all the listeners out there, info@prairieberry.com. If you want to email them for any reason, you can always get a hold of them that way, or call them at 605 574 3898. And that'll get to hold of them right there. If you have any questions or anything you can't find on the website or something comes up, you can always call them or email them. I am sure they will be right back with you on that stuff. So,
and we certainly hope to be. If anybody has a problem getting a hold of us, get a hold of me, same number, or bob@prairieberry.com, and I'd be glad to handle any questions or concerns that you might have, and would love to talk to anybody about wine.
Thank you, Bob. Excellent. Appreciate that very much.
Yeah.
And really enjoyed
very
you
cool.
on the program. And I will get an email out to you, if not this evening, tomorrow morning, because we need to talk.
Okay. Well, it was great. It was great talking to you guys, and certainly want to thank you. Extend our thanks for having you feature us on your program, and see what kind of response we get.
You can put this a link on your site if you like, so people can listen to you talk all about the winery. So you know another way to let them become informed about what you have at Prairie Berry.
Sure. Well, thank you very much, and we'll get hooked up with you.
All right, sounds good. Thanks a lot, Bob. Have a good evening.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye.
All right. Okay. Wow.
Nice. That was that really sounds great out there. I mean, you know, in the foothills, short distance from Mount Rushmore, and mm-hmm. I mean, that just.
I looked it up. It's they're about 12 miles, roughly, depending on which route you take. But according to the directions part of Google, it showed roughly 12, 13 miles, maybe 15 miles at the most. But sounds like a real scenic area. Definitely put that on the list of places to visit. And that train ride.
That's great.
I'm looking at that going, that's in September. That's not a bad time of year to travel.
That's,
see that in the fall. I bet it's amazing.
Yes, I'm sure. I am sure it would.
Yep.
Be. So
this week,
fun.
this Saturday they have the Tour de Chocolate. So if you're in South Dakota near the area, definitely stop by and check it out. They got chocolate dessert and free chocolate samples. Oh, man.
Yeah, along with the wines, they got a big variety of wines. Mm-hmm. I'm sure some of those will match up very well with that chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Easily.
Yeah. You go on their website, you see this.
If you're on.
Big chocolate dessert on there, too. No, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was looking at their menu. I was like, oh, man.
I know, I was too.
Good stuff.
Yes.
But
if you're not in South
we're so
Dakota
far.
This weekend.
Yes,
and
you can always be in Florida. Mm-hmm. I was just kidding. That's how that kind of rolled in there.
Yeah.
I was already in there.
There you are.
Cool. You have a wine fest Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Your entertainment this week is by Patrick Foy. And he's got some great sounds. Y'all love it. The weather, I believe, is going to be great this weekend here. I think Saturday it looks like the high of 79. Oh, that's cold.
Oh, I know. You can't bring a sweater, though.
Right. And you have a lot of vendors down for the wine fest. And, think about this. Valentine's Day is right around the corner. This would be a great time to come down and get some gifts for that special person in your life that you want to have Valentine's with and you don't want to be locked out because of you didn't get anything. Come down to Wine Fest February 9th. That's this Saturday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. There was something new that I saw that I hadn't seen before. The Cannoli King.
Cannoli King was there last time. He is great.
Okay, I missed that one.
Yeah, he is great.
I'm seeing cannolis. I'm thinking, okay, what am I doing Saturday? That looks. That looks good. All kinds of, you got Avon again. Avon's going to be there set up with a table with Valentine's jewelry, hint, hint, and other gift items, Scentsy, Boxer and Christie's going to be there with their Flame Rock oil candles, which I bought two last time. Very good gifts. Deb Soy candles are going to be there. Jim from Fun Jewelry will be there. Again, gift ideas, hint, hint. Organo Gold, the healthy coffee. Jamie is going to be there with that. And Ellen is going to be there with glass holders for wine bottles, bowls, and everything. Let's see, made by, she's a, what you call it? Ceramist? Ceramist?
Yeah.
For over 30 years. Okay.
Yeah, I think that sounds.
Yeah. So you definitely want to check that out, as well as Patrick for your entertainment. Don's going to be there, of course, with puzzles, pictures, clocks, really, really cool wood crafted items. And there's just going to be a lot. So come down there to Florida State's Winery, check it out. And we have a little piece on that. I guess it's just a regular thing. So I will go ahead and play that real quick, and I'll be back in 1 minute and 15 seconds. Stand by. Hopefully this is the right one. I don't know.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida State's Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@flune.com. That's C-O-R-P at F-L-E-W-N.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Was the right one?
Yeah, it wasn't the dance one, but that's okay. We always say that. Thanks for the show. So, okay, cool. Wine Fest this weekend. Be there 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Florida State's Winery, and we're going to have a great
kids
time.
Pet friendly, too. Got to point that out. Pet friendly and kids friendly.
Yep.
I mean, you don't have to find a babysitter for the pets or the kids. Bring them out.
Bring them out. Yep, bring them out. It's a great atmosphere and fun for the family. So come on out. Enjoy it. It's going to be a great, great weekend. So, and that's the place to be.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else? Do you have any other last-minute things to comment on? Or?
And no, I was telling everybody while you were out getting a hold of Bob that I had been trying to get a hold of cork people and capsules and different people like that to get on the program. I'm still... You know, since I'm doing some bottling, I reminded them again and again. They said, oh, yeah, we do. And then, you know, again, it has been more delays. So, yes,
well,
we will eventually get a hold
of those
and get them on.
I wonder if they don't want to come on, or if they can't, if we should try the screw cap people. I don't know. I mean,
stevia people? Yeah, well, that's a possibility there, too. I might be able to get a hold of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
But.
Here's some more of those benefits. That's interesting that they you know, Prairie Berry completely, they don't use the cork. They went to completely. I would imagine that that creates more of a production time, doesn't it? I mean, doesn't it have to be
actually
put on magically?
You know, I think what they use, and I should have asked him, but I think he uses a monoblock. And I've mentioned monoblocks in previous shows. It's the great big machine that you just put the bottles through, and they go through and they purge the bottles and they fill them up with wine, and they go to the next step, and you know, they squirted a little bit of nitrogen on top of it, and then the next step, it puts either a cork or a screw cap on it. It's just a built-in to the machine, and then it spits it on out the end of the machine. A great machine. It's called a monoblock. They're very expensive, too. They run anywhere from $1 million on up to $5 million, depending on what you get on the machine.
Wow.
Yeah, and they are. They're high end production machines as far as bottling goes. I mean, you can whip through cases and cases. And with the wines that they have at Prairie Berry, I would think that they would probably do have a monoblock. But like Bob just said, we could go cork if we want, but we chose to stay with the screw cap. And it almost, I would interpret that as meaning that they do have a monoblock, because there is the big section that does the corks and the big section that would do the screw cap are interchangeable. You throw like five or six different levers, and there's little handles there, and you just pull out this whole big section, set it down on the ground, grab the section for screw cap, lock it in there, and throw your six levers to lock it in, and it automatically does the screw cap as part of the monoblock, which, you know, is really cool. But the, like I was telling Bob, though, after you put in the corks and it spits it out the end, you still have to have people putting on the capsules and doing that. So that adds another step, whereas the screw caps, you don't have the capsules. It's just, it's once it spits it out, you're done. So,
how would a smaller winery, you said that this monoblock cost $1 million plus. How would a smaller winery use, or is there another option for using screw caps that's cheaper?
That's a good question. I don't know. We use cork. We do everything by hand. Mm-hmm. We're a very small winery. Right. We do everything by hand. We, you know, and like I said, we're doing bottling right now, and you know, we fill it by hand, put the corks in it, we put the capsules on it, we heat the capsules onto it, and everything's done by hand, put all the labels on by hand, and everything's done by hand. If we were to go to screw cap, I don't know what the procedure would be. I don't know if there is a cost-effective way to do that. I don't know. That's a very good question. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's another reason we need to get a hold of the Stelvin people and, you know, and see if it is an alternative for a smaller winery.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine if you'd have to manually screw all the caps on the bottles. I can't see any other way of how they would get on there.
No, unless there's
that'd be interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be. I don't know how they do it, because I'm sure the screw caps, the Stelvin closures, come in different sizes, and so they would slide over, but they'd have to be tight. I mean, I've never seen a screw cap that was loose on a bottle.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question. Okay. It really is a good question. Yeah. We'll have to check that out. Maybe get a hold of the Stelvin company and see if a representative would talk to us about it, or even send us some information, you know, if they can't come on the air.
Definitely. There's an option.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so we're trying cork, and we'll see. Maybe
maybe
try
bottles,
as well.
Maybe, you know, the capsules, talk about capsules and, you know, the PVC and the metal capsules and all that stuff and all that different things. These are all the things that people have, you know, I mean, you go down to the store and you pick up a bottle and you don't think about the fact that where's that bottle from? How was it made? What's involved in the bottle? What's involved in that, in the cork that's going in there? What, you know, there's different grades of cork. There's all sorts of stuff involved with cork and that. And then the capsule that goes on top, you can get they're PVC. They're actually a PVC capsule is what they are, and they or you can get metal capsules, which are, I'm sure everyone's seen those at one time or another. But there's quite a bit involved with it, and I want people to come on and talk to us. So I'm still working on that, and hopefully that will be coming up pretty soon here. Next week, I'm going to get a hold of South Dakota one more time and see if anyone else up there might want to join us. And if they do, then we'll try to get them on, and then we'll see about getting, you know, some of these other people on too. So next week, not sure yet what's going to happen, but tune in. It's always fun.
Yep. Entertaining, informative. All about wine.
There you go. Entertaining and informative.
True then. And if you want to know what's going on again, or you want to links to our previous guest, or you want to be a guest, there's information on the website. And I'll mention it again. Plus, there's a player on there. I don't know if it's tonight's on here already, but it's the player from Blog Talk Radio. It's on the website as well. Contact information, all that good stuff. And the Facebook feed is on there. Go to allaboutwinebtr.com. Allaboutwinebtr.com. That's the official sort of website for
Now, that's a good website. There's a lot of information on there. And there's one thing you forgot, though. I have to say this on air now. You got my picture on there, but nobody knows what you look like. We need to get a picture of you on the website so people can know what, you know, put a voice with the faces.
Yeah, every time I try and take a picture or look in the mirror, I don't see anything. So it's kind of weird. I don't appear in those.
just never, blank. Just
never comes out, yeah.
You need to grow a beard like me. That's all it
takes. That's it, yes. And I saw a photo, you know, we're way off now, but I saw a photo on Facebook. Was it from Kathy, I think, that posted a wedding photo of you?
Wedding photo, yeah, because we're,
almost exactly the same as this photo. It must have been taken around the same time. I don't know, but the photo of you on the wine show logo thing that I made and the wedding photo that was taken years ago. Wow, he still has the beard. He still has the everything.
But I was gray now. I wasn't thin. You notice the difference, too?
Oh, Yeah, there you go.
And she won't let me use Grecian formula, so hey.
Okay. I was like, wow, the picture must have been taken at the same time or something. But very cool. Uh-huh. Okay, so you want to find out what's going on the show, be sure to stay tuned to the Facebook page. That's where Ron posts all the timely information and everything. And that feed is also on the website, so you can go to the website as well. And there's links to Facebook and Twitter and everything. So very cool. We will see everybody.
Website is a favorite. That's all they need to do. Just, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can go to the
website. Pop the website in as a favorite, and then that way you can just check it out every once in a while. Yeah.
There you go. AllAboutWineBTR.com. Cool. And we will see everybody next week, which is the 14th, kind of a tough day. I believe that is Valentine's Day.
That is the Valentine's Day, yes.
Yeah. So sit around with your favorite bottle of wine and tune in.
We'll have
Cupid on or something.
We'll have some wine and Valentine information next week. I'll see if I can't find something there. So, yeah.
Yes. Well, you always manage to come up with some cool stuff. So, so we'll see you all next week, on the 14th, Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time in the U.S. right here on Blog Talk Radio. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in tonight. And thanks to our special guest, Bob, at Prairie Berry. In South Dakota. Thank you very much. It was like 32 degrees when I updated the weather there. So blistery cold. And
he said it hit 50 though. So wow.
Yeah. But their 50 and our 50 are probably way off.
Way off.
So we have tropical 50, and
And our 50s are our lows. That was their high. So there's another difference.
Yes.
There.
Yeah. All right. We'll see you all
Thank you all for tuning in. See you next week.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week. And hit it.
It's 7 p.m.
Oh.
Whoa.
You're wrong. Okay.
There we go. Everyone down. Bye now.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show. And thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.